Hello and welcome to season two of the Atlanta Opera's Blink Opera Podcast. I'm Francesco Migliotto, and I'm excited to return to Atlanta to conduct The Pirates of Penzance, one of Gilbert and Sullivan's most popular operettas. So a little background about me. I came to opera and conducting from the piano. Making a longer story a little short, I ended up going to the University of Western Ontario for a piano performance degree. And it was there that I stumbled into conducting an opera. I was in a sight singing and dictation class, and I was going to exempt out of it, but you had to be there for a month. So I ended up just going to the bathroom to get out of the class because I didn't want to be in it anymore. And I heard the orchestra playing, and I'd never really heard an orchestra up close. So I went into the rehearsal room, and I stood there for 2 hours for their entire rehearsal, left all my books, scores, jacket, everything in the other classroom, and waited for the conductor, whom I did not know. I waited for him to come off the podium, and when he did and the rehearsal was done, I walked up to him and I said, I don't know you and you don't know me, but you have to teach me how to do what it is you're doing on that box over there. So, The Pirates of Penzance. All right, this is a section that I would like to call Imitation is the Sincerest Form of Flattery. Now, Sullivan's music to me is not only buoyant and brilliant and fantastic, but of course, as with any other composer, you can certainly trace the history of musical influences and composers. And of course, it goes without saying from the very beginning of his career that Mendelssohn was a big influence on Sullivan. And you can definitely see that also in just the simplicity of the orchestration. There are parodies that are also important and comical and funny and help bring together opera and operetta and all of these different styles with what he was writing at that time and in this style of music. You can definitely hear parodies of Verdi when you hear Come Friends Who Plough the Seas, and of course the big chorus of You Triumph Now. I think those are hilariously comical parodies. And of course, in Poor Wandering One, you definitely hear Juliet's waltz, Gounod's of that. But also for me in the cadenzas, and I discussed this with Suzanne Burgess, who's playing the role of Mabel in our production, there's a little bit of Traviata in there, and it's in the right key for Violetta. You hear the influence of Schubert in places like in choruses like Sighing Softly, but also for me, and this is one of my favorite things to conduct in this piece. Away, away, that trio really does have like the Erlkönig kind of Schubert Schumann leader sort of feeling to me. And of course, for me, the linchpin of this opera as far as imitations and taking from people, because I'm Italian, Gioacchino Rossini, of course, for the Modern Major Generals, Pater Aria that also has an important chorus part in it. But it's imitation that is unbelievably elevated and specific to Sullivan. It is so perfect how he combines the melody and builds the melody and the rhythm around all of that text. It's a perfect parody and using every angle that you can to maximize the text, the moment, and the character. All of these different techniques that he uses that you take to your advantage to make it more organic. And it really does give the seams of the piece an incredible amount of flexibility. So I find concentrating quite seriously on those things to find that perfect timing and use his techniques and maximize them really does give the piece an incredible flow between what is sung, what is not sung, what is spoken, what is monotone spoken. I mean, it really is an incredible use of all of these compositional techniques. So the way every opera starts, or at least should start, should be with a great overture. And here we do have an incredible overture. However, it is not written by Sullivan. But Alfred Sellier definitely takes a lot of music from the opera, which is, of course, one of the traditions. There are certainly a lot of operas that start with overtures that are completely different music, but this one incorporates quite a bit of music. And there are two sections of this particular overture and music that comes back, that comes later in the opera, that I'd like to highlight. As we were mentioning before, Sullivan does an incredible job not only of setting Gilbert's text, but also there are ways to set that, and the architecture of those melodies matters. The music will be used comically in the setting of the text and in the leaps and athleticness of that text. So when we find towards the end of the overture, he uses the music from our chorus here. Here's a first-rate opportunity, which is number 11A. And the leaps that you hear from da da dum bum 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 dee da 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 ding bum 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 ba da 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 yum bum 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 dee da ding dum dum yum bing bum bing da dee dum. All of these little leaps in there and this athleticness in the melody adds to the delivery of the text. So you have every single thing working for you to get the hilarity of that text out. For me, another special moment that I really do love to conduct, and I think, as I mentioned before, is one of those places where we sort of really come down to a beautiful, very emotional and human level with the duet between Frederick and Mabel. Alfred was very, very smart in taking the slow section of their duet, "I'll Leave Me Not to Pine," and placing it in the middle of the overture. And for me, just for those composition nerds like myself out there, he sets it in A-flat major in the overture, and it is actually in G major when they sing the duet together. And the difference for me there is when you're in a key like A-flat major, there's a certain warmth that the strings have. Because there are so many flats, there are almost no open strings. So to come out of an oboe solo to sort of change and mix that, which is a little reminiscent of Beethoven 5, but to have this in that key set there is really remarkable in the amount of warmth that it prepares the audience for when it comes back later. And that, I think, is a special detail that that I wanted to share with you. And I just find that piece extremely beautiful. So let's listen now to "I'll Leave Me Not to Pine." Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of score study here for my next section, because it's really hard for me to pick another just piece when really, of course, as a conductor, I think in sort of bigger segments and sections. Really, starting at number 6, the "Stop, Ladies, Pray," which is the first time that Frederick interacts with the chorus ladies. And of course, he says, "Stop, ladies, pray," and then they, of course, respond, "Amen." So this combination here that comes up when you hear this introduction is a very classic, a sort of, this could come from Verdi, from Rossini, any of this introduction could come from that, and this a blunt stop. But then, of course, you have the combination here now of dialogue over one note, that sort of chanted dialogue, and then you also have recitative chordal accompaniments that would bring you to Rossini, Mozart, Donizetti, any of those things are used here. And of course, it is quite hilarious that, you know, Frederick is sort of catching them as they're trying to take off their shoes and stockings to go for a little dip in the lake. And of course, they see a man and hilarity ensues. And then I do want to point out that in Frederick's famous aria, "Oh, Is There Not One Maiden's Breast," which is also hilarious because they refuse. They say, "There is not one maiden's breast, or not one ugly maiden here that would offer you their love." No. But I think it's very interesting in this entire section that we note that this aria is in 3-4. So we already have Frederick in 3-4. Of course, he finishes the aria. Mabel comes in. And of course, we've already discussed a little bit about Mabel's aria also being in a waltz tempo, which is 3-4. So you get through "Poor Wandering One," where the sisters are already starting to have their own opinions of what is happening here and what they should do and how they should respond. So for me, When you get to, and the end of this section that is super interesting to me, is number 10, the chattering chorus of "How Beautifully Blue the Sky." So for me, when the chorus is singing that to sort of distract themselves from the lovers, they sing this piece in 2-4, which is duple time. The chorus, as their own little distraction to themselves, continue to sing in 2-4, but the music written above that, that is sung by first the soprano, then the tenor, then together, is in 3-4, but using the same big beats across that entire bar. So to separate the lovers, a compositional technique of using two different time signatures at the same time is used, which I think is used in a perfect way. But more interesting, more elegant to that is that ladies in the chorus chatter, 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 chatter. Then as the lovers come up, the melody is changed and is simplified and diminuendos and sort of fades out of the way so that the listener is brought. You get this cross fading of two different things happening. And that the use of that and the timing of that is absolutely brilliant and brings the audience's ear exactly to where the composer wants it. So let's take a little bit of a listen to this chorus, number 10, the "How Beautifully Blue the Sky." Okay, so one of my absolute favorite pieces to conduct in this opera is, of course, the introductory aria, sort of a la Figaro in Rossini, of the Modern Major General Stanley. The patter part of it is what I want to compare to Rossini, because many of us, having heard and know The Barber of Seville, Cenerentola, there's always arias where there are just many, 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 many words over many, many, many notes. And the way that Sullivan does this in such an elegant, major general kind of way, there's a sort of maestoso-ness about his character that you have to have, because it is a comical character, but he is the modern major general. He has to be of a certain level. So the music is actually, to me, elevated and elegant, but also funny, comical, and pattery all at the same time. And now let's listen to a little bit of this incredible, hilarious, fast, pattery, super funny, amazing piece.
I can tell and dotted Raphael some Derrida's and Sophonies, and know the croaking chorus from the frogs of Aristophanes, and I can hum a fugue of which you've heard the music's dinner for. Dinner for. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore. And whistle all the airs from that infernal nonsense pinafore.
Then I can write a washing bill in Babylonic uniform and tell you every detail of Caractacus's uniform. In short, in matters vegetable, animal, and mineral, I am the very model of a modern major general.
Thank you all for joining me on the Atlanta Opera Podcast, Blink Opera. I'm Francesco Miliotto, the conductor for the Atlanta Opera production of The Pirates of Penzance. I hope you've enjoyed learning more about Gilbert and Sullivan's classic, comic, tune-filled, fun-for-all operetta.